Deadwood Soundwave.
Welcome to Cosmic Void. I'm Biggs.
I'm Xavion.
So today we're covering Conan the Barbarian. So before we start, I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
Our holiday block we lashed together was I, Tanya, Hugo, the Beastmaster, and Conan and the Barbarian. Conan. Let's justify this into a holiday block. So I was thinking I, Tanya is like an ice skating thing, right?
I'll give you that.
Yeah, yeah. So holiday movie.
Yeah, Hugo's more...
It's a winter time.
It is winter. Hugo gives me Christmas everywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. So holiday movie.
And then...
Conan the Barbarian, he's crucified. So you got your Christian like Christmas
there.
Oh my
there,
God, right?
You do. And then Beastmaster is
I don't know
New
where
Year's.
To go with the Beastmaster.
Yeah, we'll give it New Year's Eve.
Saving everyone.
Coming together with naked people?
Mostly. Coming together with your family, right? Like he's making out with his cousin in that movie.
Oh, man, I could say something. Yeah, there's so much.
It's like Christmas in Alabama.
Yeah, they're definitely coming together. So... Yeah, we do some of the most random movies. And then it's funny because I just told you yesterday when we were working together, I was like, I want to do Love and Monsters. I freaking forgot about that movie and we'll get into that. But like, it's a good movie. You'll like
it. Yeah. So I do want to do a quick production note up top. So we do have a Patreon going. If people haven't noticed it in the descriptions, it's patreon.com/RedwoodSoundLabs. It's also the Patreon page for my sports movie podcast, Fields of Glory. And so there will be new content every month. And two pieces of content altogether. There will always be something that was recorded before that's not available on your podcatchers. So we'll have that. Xavi and I are going to take a little bit of a break because I pre-recorded some stuff with the Alexes back in the summertime. So I'm dropping that. It's a mini series called The Road to Ruin. So we will be back together in about 5 weeks. But meanwhile, we're going to record some Patreon content for the future. So we're going to do the show proper.
Yes.
It's just going to be Patreon only. So just noting that right there. If you can't remember the link, I will always have the description down below in the podcast and you can always click on it. It's like $5 a month. And there's a couple of free things on there too that you can listen to and enjoy.
Yay.
Okay. So we talked last week with the Beastmaster about how Star Wars kind of kicked the door open for all this fantasy stuff. And I said that none of it made money. That's not actually true.
It budgeted.
I was going over the top a little bit, but what's really funny is we literally mentioned Conan in the podcast and I never had the forethought to say, oh yeah, but Conan was a success. It was absolutely a success. It was being developed since the 70s. It was a series of novels and Marvel comics that are still going today.
Yeah.
And like the spinoff Red Sonja is still going in like Dynamite Comics right now. And they may or may not be making a Red Sonja movie. It's hard to say because Bryan Singer was attached and I don't know, man, like that's a pretty tough hill to climb. But all of that being said, we got a King Conan movie that may or may not be in development. Universal was working on it. They dropped the idea of it and then they said we might do a show. And so there's been no word on that front for a while. But this was a movie that did slay in the box office. $19 million budget, $80 million in the box office, and made something like $300 million on rentals. Because when videos first came out, you could not buy them. That's... Only rental places could buy them.
You got old Blockbuster and Hollywood Video.
Well, I don't think Blockbuster was quite around yet.
So what came first, Hollywood Video?
Oh, I don't think Hollywood Video was around yet either. It started out as like mom and pop places for sure.
Oh, really?
I don't know when they hit, but I feel like it was the late 80s, early 90s somewhere. This is like the beginning of rental stores, you know? So like this was a new source of income that the movie companies were really excited about. And Conan absolutely played in that. Oh, I saw this when I was probably way too young to see it. I saw The Destroyer first at a party in Portland when I was in second grade.
Yeah.
And I thought it was great. It's not great, but I thought it was great when I was a kid. And then I went back and finally saw Conan when I was in middle school. And I was like, whoa, because it was so much more violent and so many more boobs in the movie than I expected.
There's a lot going on in there. I don't I don't know how I felt about this movie.
Yeah. So
it's weird.
Let's just get it out there on top. Couple of things. First off, tying off that string of Star Wars, they literally put James Earl Jones in the villain role. And at one point basically says he's his father. And yes. I'm just like, whoa.
And I'm going to be honest. I was like, why was like every movie James Earl Jones like being this white guy? Like,
because quite frankly, that was what the white public was comfortable with black people. And it sucks. But James Earl Jones, I think, does a fantastic job.
Yeah. We all knew Luke was black somehow. I mean,
it's also weird that he has like long, straight hair in this movie too.
And then like, okay, that opening scene, dude. And he's just... Oh, and he's staring. I'm like, oh my God.
Right.
And I already know what movie this is going to be like.
And I'm not sure that they got the point across in that, but when I was a kid, that very much read like he's supposed to be hypnotizing her. Right?
Yeah. But me never seeing this movie and then kind of coming to, I'm like, oh, okay. He was trying to hypnotize her. I thought they were trying to show that he had blue eyes.
Yeah. Well, like, Amanda was immediately like, does he have blue eyes? And I was like, yes. And she goes, does he really have blue eyes? And I went, no.
They're like hazel, but like they're definitely not blue. And like you're staring, and then like the long hair and the blue eyes. And I was like, damn.
Yeah.
I'm glad y'all didn't make him blonde because
I felt kind of bad. Like when I was like talking this up and then I was watching, I was like, oh yeah, that's that white privilege sneaking in there because all of this just slipped by me And I immediately, when I see James Earl Jones, I was like, oh no. Because I just remembered like he's the bad guy. Like, oh no. And then it gets even worse when Conan's dressing up to get into the cult and they look like Klan's members, yeah, dude.
Dude, it was, you know, some back in the day. I mean, if you want to...
I mean, at least they painted him as the bad guy, but it's also like the director is John Milius, who's like a conservative nutbag. So it's like, this is the dude who directed Red Dawn and he wrote Apocalypse Now. And like every movie he does is about war. And this miniseries we're doing, we're actually going to be talking about Milius quite a bit because we do The Big Lebowski. And the character of Walter, John Goodman's character in that, he's doing an impression of John Milius. That role was written as John Milius looks exactly like John Milius. Millius did at a certain point in the 80s. So like this dude is a gun nut. He's like super war crazy and he's the one directing it. Script also written by Oliver Stone, and they threw out most of what Oliver Stone did. There's little remnants of it left, but this was Oliver Stone was super coked out and he wrote it like the Beastmaster in reverse. So Conan, what they went with is closer to the novels and comics in that like it's this barbarian from a kind of European past, right?
Sorry.
Yeah. But like Oliver Stone wrote it as a futuristic thing. And so they took all of that out. Okay. But like Beastmaster did the opposite. It was a futuristic thing that they turned into a barbarian thing.
Yeah. And like, oh my God. Okay. So I made some comments. They do the swinging of the sword. Shing, shing. I'm like, oh, here, Beastmaster. Ah, he's trained. He's learned.
I thought of you the second he like, swirled around his sword for the first time. I thought of you immediately, Xavier. Yeah, I was like, there it is.
There it is. The training moment. All by myself. This is what I do in my bedroom, by the way. At my apartment. I just swing swords and then I learn to slice people.
Because someday you'll have to get in a giant sword battle.
I will. One of these days I'm going to, after already killing the main boss, you know, I'm going to have to fight a huge war after that as well.
Right. And you'll have to tell somebody you're their father, basically. Or literally, depending.
Oh man, I could go somewhere, but we go. No, I just, you know, I'm not gonna lie, I found myself bored.
Yeah, it's an 80s movie, which tended to move quicker than 70s movies, but it's at a 70s movie pace for
sure. It's weirdly good, but like, okay, y'all, I did not like the movie.
No, that's okay. Dude, okay. I started watching it and I started clicking off like, Xavier's not gonna like that. Understandably, Xavier's not gonna like that. And then the pacing thing, I was like, I still enjoy it, but I was finding myself looking at my, you know, watch a time or two, like, holy crap, like, this is a long 2 hour, 9 minute movie.
I was
looking at the back of my
eyelids. I was watching it through it. Like at times, you guys can't see me, but big scan. And I was like this, I'm like trying to keep my eye open. I'm like, see if he's just stay awake.
And I gotta be honest, man, for the time, this didn't feel like a slow movie when I was a kid. But now I watch it and it absolutely is, because that genre is so quick now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I always hear that Raiders is a slow movie to younger kids, and I will fight them to the ends of the earth because I do not believe that.
Yeah.
It's just not hyper speed like a lot of things are. But sure this enough. Movie definitely is glacial, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's just slow.
It's slow. And then like it doesn't make sense, but it does. You
How
know,
does it not make sense? I'm just curious.
I don't know if it doesn't make sense. I just get scatterbrained a little bit. Beastmaster did that too, though. Beastmaster did a lot of little scenes. Because
they're throwing a whole world around you and talking slightly
so
weird.
I guess,
so
yeah,
it's hard
so what's
to...
the word? I don't know if it's... Because the movie, in a way, it makes... it makes sense, but it doesn't, you know, there were just too many different aspects to it. I don't know.
Well, I will get into all the dialogue that's written in a way because like it is a very philosophical movie, weirdly enough, and they're talking about a lot of things. And so we'll get into it as we go along, but there's not a lot of dialogue in the movie either.
Right.
So you kind of hang on the dialogue that's there. And quite frankly, it's Schwarzenegger's first big movie. I mean, he was in Pumping Iron, for example. He's in Hercules Goes Bananas, where somebody dubs over his voice. You get a guy who kind of talks like this over Schwarzenegger's body. And he doesn't have the mass of English yet.
Okay,
and so there's things where like they had to do line reading after line reading where he would say women and he would say women and things like that. And it's so funny that they worried about it so much because like becomes such a positive thing for Schwarzenegger over his career. Like part of it is he doesn't speak like any other A-list actor.
Yeah.
And so it's like fun to impersonate. And I think audiences got more used to it as it went along. And so it was part of the fun, but at this time, it was very much looked at as
a
liability.
Well, he's got a strong-ass accent. Like,
yeah,
it's just strong, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely stronger than it is now, I would not have picked up on if I hadn't been paying attention to it because I read so much about how they worried about his accent. But I just watched a documentary with him on Netflix. It was this three-part thing. And yeah, his accent is not nearly as strong as it was in this movie. And I just never would have put that together had I not just watched that.
He does a scene in there where he says something and I was like, I tried not to laugh, but it wasn't funny how he said it. I just wanted to make sure I heard it correctly. I want to say it was like they were passing him something and he says this line and I cannot think of it. You'll probably say it. One thing I will say is this. I might have taken this movie in a way where it threw me off, but when you do like the synopsis and you go through it, I actually understand that. I'm like, oh, okay, I was understanding that correctly. Oh, that's what this was supposed to be. So I'm actually kind of curious to see what I really thought.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I didn't grab direct quotes. Talk about what they're talking about. God damn, dude, I only have so many hours in a day. You know? All right, let's get into the synopsis. Conan's father forges a sword. Then on a mountaintop, he tells his son that the giant stole the secret of steel from Crom. They left one on an ancient battlefield, and that is how mankind learned the riddle of steel. Their village is raided by Thulsa Doom. Conan's father is killed by hunting dogs. Conan's mother clutches to him and raises a sword as they're surrounded, and Doom entrances her with a look and then decapitates her with her husband's sword. So first off, when you see the sword being forged, that's such a like fantasy moment, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're so coded to be like, this is the sword, you know, and it's an important sword. It's not necessarily the sword, but it's a sword that's important. There's two of them in this, right?
I thought there was two forging sessions.
I think there's one forging session, but the father does his sword and then later Conan finds a sword, right?
Which that's right.
Kind of mirrors Arthur in a way because you have Arthur has his first sword, Excalibur. Not Excalibur. He's got his first sword, whatever it is, and then it breaks in a combat. And then so he gets Excalibur from the Lady of the Lake, right? So you got like two swords. So this is kind of entrenched in like
the
European mythology.
Okay,
you know?
See that. Yeah.
And then he's talking to him about steel, which is really important to this movie because basically he's telling him that the riddle is steel. It's not that flesh is stronger than steel, which is what Doom will say later, but it's that steel is valuable tool, but it's only how good you are using it, right? Like Fair it's enough. The person using the steel that's important, not yeah. necessarily the steel. And that's something that Doom doesn't understand because he goes on both extremes, right? Like we find out later, his early days, he's looking for the best steel he can find. Exactly. And then he's completely bought into the flesh.
Which
right?
is...
And like that he's stronger than like any piece of steel.
Yeah, and then that
but he doesn't
does
quite understand the ways in which that comes together. He just goes from one extreme to the other.
Yeah. It was giving me very much that Beastmaster where it just has the people around. You know what I mean? They're sacrificial. Everything is just a sacrifice. Everything is a this. And to him, again, the flesh was stronger than steel. He says it in there. You know yeah. what I mean? And so you don't get that at the beginning. At
no,
the beginning,
because he's a different
He's a
person.
Completely
he's
different
earlier
person.
On his journey.
I actually forget... This is awful. I forget, like, through Conan that he was a little kid. He was a little kid, so years go by.
Yes.
And so takes me a minute, but yeah, you saying all that, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, well, yeah, oh, yeah, Conan does grow up at one point.
Yeah, and they give you the thesis at the beginning of this movie that they keep returning to in various ways. So
yeah,
Conan and other children are put into slavery and spend day and night pushing around a mill called the Wheel of Pain. We see Conan growing with less people pushing the wheel until only he remains as an adult pushing it himself. He is taken to a fight as a gladiator. He wins many fights and is taken to be trained and educated in the East. I love the Wheel of Pain thing. We used to call it the Wheel of Crom, and I went looking it up on the internet, and not a single person calls it the Wheel of Crom. And just over and over again, I see Wheel of Pain, Wheel of Pain, Wheel of Pain. And then I saw a music segment that's called Wheel of Pain. I'm like, okay, it's Wheel of Pain.
I so guess I we're sticking with Wheel of Pain, everybody.
That was one of the things that's always made me laugh, because you see him as a little kid and yeah. they show him as an adult, and he is just ripped in every way when he's an adult, which is kind of a cool way to show how you grow up and be strong. But it's also like, wouldn't it be like he would have super big calves and shoulders, but not necessarily everything in between, because you're just pushing a wheel yeah. your whole life?
Man, when the years go by, I was like, oh my God, that was so fast. That's why you forget he's a kid. What I was getting out of it is he's supposed to be barbaric. He's supposed to be a barbarian. And so from what I have always known folklore, anything to be, barbarians were big men.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Big,
with fantasy, that's what you always
exactly.
think.
Exactly. And so I think we're supposed to put that together and go, oh my gosh, he came to his barbarian ways. That's why he's Conan. And it's like, well, he's been pushing a wheel forever. And now he knows how to fight. You know what I mean?
That's the interesting thing too, because we see that leveling up in the gladiator fights in a quick montage. Yeah. He gets in the first one and the dude's just beating him.
Yeah.
And he's like, what is going on? And the yeah. dude's like biting him and stuff. And then he just finally beats down the dude. And then you see him getting better and better. And then he's like getting exultation from the crowd. And that's when he starts to actualize a little bit, because he realizes that he's getting a measure of fame. And suddenly it's not just, I don't care about life or death. It's also, he cares about the crowd yeah. and things like that. So he's starting to care about more than just the basic things.
He's starting to be knowledgeable of some things, you know, of human emotion, I guess, which honestly, stuff like this, what I will say that I like about it is that it does like take apart the fact that it's back then too. Like his reaction to getting, I mean, obviously anybody getting bit is going to be something different, but like during that, he didn't know what was going on. And the way his acting was so good that it made it seem so barbaric. You know what I mean? That you almost want to believe that it was like that back then. They just threw him together. Hey, fight, you know?
I think this is a big key to Schwarzenegger being such a big actor, because honestly, in the 80s, and I would say at least up to the mid 90s, I don't think there was a bigger actor in the world, like physically, but also in terms of fame.
Yeah.
And part of that is because in a lot of ways, he could be a silent film actor. Like yeah. he's just got this big presence and he's really good at showing things. And he just doesn't get credit for that, because we think about the one-liners with
yeah.
him, because he's so good at it.
But he didn't need to. Yeah, you're right. He really didn't need to say anything in this. You could have just watched and been like, okay, I understand. It gives that, because again, it gives, well, I am comparing the two, because this is the reason we're even doing Conan, was because we watched
Beastmaster. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But him and Beastmaster, they have these ways about them that it's silent, but you understand them. You know what I mean? You see that silence in them. And let me tell you, he looked good back then.
Oh,
good.
Dude, yeah.
Lord.
Yeah. So if people don't know, in the 70s, he was the champion champion for Mr. Universe. I think he won the contest more than anybody else. And his idol was this guy who won Mr. Universe, and he went on to do a Tarzan movie. And so he was like, well, Conan's close enough to Tarzan. So he gets looped into doing this in the 70s and has this long ranging contract because it's in development and goes between writers and directors and companies even. But at the end, they go with Schwarzenegger because he looks like Conan in the comics. Like, I read it a little bit as a kid. And like, he is the embodiment of Conan. When you put long hair on him, he just looked like Conan. And that's ultimately why they wanted him, was because they said it looked like all the oil paintings that were on the covers of the novels.
Damn. So. I mean, shit, he was doing something for me in this movie.
Yeah. No, I mean, he is ripped, dude. Yeah. Like, absolutely.
Oh, that scene in the cage? She was all scared. I said, bitch, you better get in there.
Yeah, so that's the thing that they had, is like, they're mating him off.
Yeah.
And they kind of have that moment where they throw the woman in the cage and she's scared, but you could tell he's kind of going with kindness. And it's an interesting scene because nothing about this is okay, but you also get the impression he's only going to go with consent, but you have all these people watching him and you get that spectacle there, you know?
Yeah, but he
which is what this movie is too, because like, it's a lot of topless women and it's a lot of like Schwarzenegger wearing almost nothing, showing off his body too, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of exploitation.
I'm okay with that.
A little bit for daddy and a little bit for daddy, right?
Exactly. Shoot, live your best life.
And then he gets taken off to the east where he's training, which is like kind of crappy because it's like this mysticism trope, you know?
Yeah, because he got released, right? Like the guy.
They're sending him there to train and to get educated, but then they release him.
Okay.
So Conan is then chased by dogs into a cave. He sees an Atlantean tomb and takes Crom's sword from his skeleton. He emerges from the cave wearing the skins of the dog. He finds a witch who said there was a prophecy of a man with great strength from the north who would become king and crush the snakes of the earth. Conan implores her to tell him of Doom's symbol, two snakes facing each other that are one. She tells him that there is a price. They bet and she turns into a demon. He chucks her into the fire.
Dude.
I love to throw in the term chucks into, and because then, it keeps happening in all these movies.
Everybody gets
our hero
chucked.
Just chucks something and, over and over again.
Yeah, like these men are extra strong because they're like what is the press. They're doing like a gorilla press above their heads and throwing people, and I'm like, good lord. I mean, look, she wouldn't let go though, you know. That whole scene was crazy. I wasn't ready for that, and I was like, oh, okay, this is kind of hot. I went, whoa. Holy
face.
Butterface.
Yeah, she basically turns into the snaky kind of demon thing.
I really was like, oh my, what is happening right now? What is happening? And then like, I'm like, is she a witch? I'm like, nah, she turned into something different.
I think she's a witch, but I don't know. I bet you'll watch what you put your thingy
into from now on.
Yeah, so I love it when he goes in the tomb because he's being chased by the dogs. And when he comes out, he's wearing the dog hides, which I wanted to mention because this is Conan is hunted and now he's the hunter, right? Like, he's got that steel.
Such
so
a
now
comical
he's the one
scene,
hunting.
Too, because he's just walking and I'm like, oh, that's pretty good. The scene where they're running, those dogs are running, I had to rewind it twice. But the reason I did it was because the first time it scared me, I'm like, what is that? And then you come to find out it's these wolves chasing him. And I'm like, oh my gosh, those things are fast.
And it literally bit Schwarzenegger. There's this commentary track that's so funny. And he's like, yeah, they bit me. You know, it wasn't very fun day on the set.
Oh my gosh.
I missed the commentary track for this so bad.
Well, you know what's crazy is, I mean, it won't be a big thing, but there's parts where like horses are rolling around and stuff. I'm like, that actually happened. Those horses are getting hurt.
Yeah. There's no CGI. Some of them are trained to be able to take a fall, but sometimes they're just dying. And I think by the 80s, they're probably not doing that so much, but I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to say.
You know, PETA. Was it PETA?
Not PETA.
Not PETA.
Wait.
Isn't it PETA?
People again.
People.
Against. Maybe it is.
Wow, we really showed our intelligence here, guys. I shouldn't even have said it. I was on me. I think it's PETA. PEDIA.
Yeah, yeah, you're probably right.
People not people eating against something, domestic something animal. I don't know. I'm not part of it. So
there's this thing when he takes a sword from Crom and Crom kind of falls forward, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's notable, and we'll get back to that later. But I just sort of wanted to put a pin in that just to okay. remember that scene. Yeah. And then there's the whole thing with the prophecy where it's just like, of course you get the prophecy, but then we get a little bit of a sexy time with the prophecy that turns into nightmare.
God, that was like, that's nightmare for me. I was like, ah!
And they bring up the standard for doom, which is those two snakes that are joined and kind of face each other. That's a cool symbol. I really like that.
It was really cool, actually.
But that is where there's this biblical thing running through it. And they kept saying they weren't pulling from the Bible. And I don't think they consciously did, but there are these allusions to Christianity. And I would say that's one of them, is like the serpent is the thing that tempted Eve
to eat the apple.
Right.
The forbidden fruit or whatever.
Exactly. And doom is constantly tempting people. Like, that's kind of what he does.
Yeah, well, he hypnotizes them with his blue eyes and long hair.
Yep, and other things that we'll get into, but like, he's all about the temptation for sure.
Yeah.
Conan finds Subutai, a thief and archer, chained behind the witch's hut. They go from town to town stealing and ask about Doom's symbol. They go to Zamora and Valeria. A brigand sneaks into the Tower of Serpents with them to steal the jewels from the shrine. Conan fights and kills a snake larger than him. Conan and Valeria celebrate between the sheets and get very drunk. The three are captured by the city guard and brought to King Osric. He gives them handfuls of gems to rescue his daughter, Yasima, who is in Doom's cult at the Temple of Set. Valeria wants to run off with Conan instead and keep the gems. He refuses, and he's the only one to take up the quest.
By the way, I thought it was Valeria.
Maybe it is Valeria.
No. But then I started thinking of Venereal, and I was like, would they name her that? And I was like, nope, that's not the same name.
They only say it once, and it's after she dies.
Yeah, so. And it's like, and then I watched it in subtitles. I never got her name. They said her name once, and then they do it in the subtitle where things are happening. That's it. I was like, oh, I didn't know her name was Valerian.
Valerian Steel. I mean, that's probably where Martin got it from.
Oh my gosh.
I love the thief.
Yes, the thief was one of my faves.
They have the whole thing with the archery, but like, does he even fire an arrow in this? I'm not sure that he does. He does? Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's about to come up if we haven't talked about it yet.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, he did. He did a couple. Because there's a part I want to say that happens, and I'm like, it was a little bit much, but I understood. And I was like, oh, okay. It was cool for that time. Also, there's the scene where they are breaking into the temple and they go down and she goes up. Did you see, I rewound this like 5 times because I had to make sure he did this. Did you see him kick that rat across the screen?
No, I didn't.
What? That's amazing. Oh my gosh. So they're there and like, they're in the little bottom pit, you know, they're like, look at, and you just see it. And I, you hear it and you see it and you just see this rat eats. Because it looks like the thief moves his hand in front of his face. No, he kicked that rat and it flings across the screen. And they're just like, all right, keep going.
Wow.
So good. I was like, wow, they really took care of the animals.
The snake is super cool in this because that is a mechanical snake. They made this giant mechanical snake. And I just love stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
They were like, how are we going to do this big giant snake? We'll just do it practically and make mechanical stuff. Like, that's cool.
It was really cool. I'll give it that. I was like, is that a giant snake? I didn't know how big it was going to be. At first, I thought it was going to be that computerized, like,
well, move. They couldn't do that back in those days.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So,
like, they had CGI, but it was terrible. Like, watch Tron and you'll see the level at which, yeah. So that's the level that CGI was at the time.
Yeah.
But like, it's so cool. Cause it's like this big thing that somebody built. I don't know. That's really awesome.
I like that they did it, especially because its eyes opened and it kind of had a realistic feel to it.
Yeah.
So I'll give you that. I'll give it
that. It moves a little slow, but I don't know. I'm okay with that just because they built this giant thing, you know?
Yeah. The snake. That was an interesting part. I was like, is that a giant snake? Like, it is.
You texted me when you started watching this and you were like, you didn't tell me James Earl Jones is in this. And then I told you Max von Sydow was in it. So did you catch what part he played? I only knew because I recognized his
voice.
Was
he the king?
He was the king. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm going to give y'all this. I felt like we were in a Rockstars Castle, because he was given rock star. There was maybe it wasn't him. There's a character in here that gives me, I'm like, what's with the trench coat and the Kiss outfit? Like, what is going on right now? Yeah,
that was not him.
Okay, I thought it was him, but I think you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, so he's the king who gives them gems and tells them that, like, gems lose their luster after a while, and all that's left is the love for your daughter, right? This ties in with the opening quote, which I laughed when I first saw the opening quote, because they quote Nietzsche.
Yeah.
And they say, that which does not kill you makes you stronger. And I was like kind of laughing, and then I realized that is the theme throughout this. Like, this whole movie is nihilistic, and we'll get more into that as we go along. But one of the things I want to mention is Conan, we see him as king later, and he seems like he's just done with it. You know, like, he's just tired and annoyed and cranky. That's exactly how the king looks in this. Like, there's no more lust for battle. There's nothing really driving you. You're just like, you're at the end of the rope. And so all he has left.
Happened.
Yeah. And all he has left is the love of his life, in a way, like his daughter. And we see that with Conan in a way. He's got Valeria as, like, the, I'm going to go with that pronunciation. Yeah. That's probably right.
Yeah.
But he's got Valeria, and she's the love of his life, but he kind of throws her off for the quest. Right. And so I just find that kind of interesting, because, like, Crom doesn't care, you know, like, they mention it a few times, but Crom kind of sits in judgment and looks at battles, but doesn't ever interfere, doesn't ever step in. You know, he's an uncaring god. And so there's, like, this absence of God around nihilism. And then there's also this thing of, like, whatever you're setting out to do, it doesn't really matter. And so that runs throughout this movie. So it's actually, like, a very appropriate quote. So it does make
sense
movie.
Then. I see that now. That actually makes a lot of sense.
Conan finds some sacred standing stones and meets a cleric named Akiro, who warns him of Doom's power. Then he disguises as a serpent priest. He's captured and tortured. Doom tells him that the flesh is more powerful than steel, and has a girl leap off a cliffside. Conan is crucified to the Tree of Woe. Subutai finds him and returns him to Akiro to heal him. He warns that the spirits will exact a heavy toll. Valeria accepts it, and he heals. Okay, so let's get into, like, the robes and stuff here when when they're doing this cult. Do you want to just speak your mind?
I don't know what to say. I was like, hold on. Please tell me that's not what we think it is. I don't know. I
think there's a veil white supremacy that runs through this movie, whether they intended there to be
and it was
or not.
And it was a cult. We all knew that, in the way that they were worshiping a certain thing. My question is, what did James Earl Jones think when he saw?
Dude, that's what I was wondering too. I just kept thinking it when I was watching. I was like, what does James Earl Jones think with all these get-ups? Like,
yeah, and because there was
and
no
wearing
other
the straight hair and all that.
Yeah, there was no other black people in this movie either.
Yeah, we had some Asians, right? Like, because you have all the Eastern stuff and the thief and the cleric, which all ties
in
with
stereotypes. Which all was weird, because it did turn into a weird... Don't get me wrong on this. I might be incorrect, but I got, like, barbarians, samurais, and pirates almost in a weird way.
Sure, yeah.
It kind of gave a little bit of all of that, and I'm like, what is happening right now? Are we watching Pirates of the Caribbean?
About it, over time, we've segmented these things to be different, but back in those days, you would often entangle elements of all of those stories together. Everything.
Exactly, which is why it's a good, like, really good at what they did. But I don't know, that whole scene, I was just like, and they're all praying to them. It was giving me a little KKK up in there, you know?
I mean, it was to me too. Now, apparently what Milius was going for, and this is a little bit lost to us, but it was very prevalent in people's minds at the time. So there was the Jonestown Massacre. You had this cult leader who basically had all of his followers drink Kool-Aid, right?
Oh,
you ever hear people say, like,
yes,
what, you drank the Kool-Aid? Like, they're referring to this cult leader had everybody drink Kool-Aid, and then they all died as a result. And so they were thinking about that while they were putting it together. But regardless, there's definitely, like, a white supremacist
string
in there. It's
obviously a cult thing, though. It's obviously in there. You know what I mean? Which
apparently there's, like, strings of communism in there too, because we're at the height to the Cold War. So there's this thing of like, you have one powerful person at the top, and then the masses of people that are all doing whatever they can for the leader at the top. Like, that's how the United States looked at communism.
Interesting.
And so you have that strength. Like, you cannot pull Reaganism out of this movie either, because it's right there in 82. That's how the country was largely thinking.
Oh, okay. I'm teaching me something new.
Yeah. So I think that's all there. So it's this mishmash of like yucky things. Like,
yeah. You know what's weird is I did find that in this movie. Like, even there's something, James Earl Jones's character, Doom. I kept wanting to do that. Doom. I kept doing that the whole time in my apartment. There's something very icky about him. And it's sad because I almost liked the other villain more in Master versus this villain. But it's hard because, yeah, this character was like, it was gross. And then just things that you see throughout the movie where you're like, ew, all right, he's all about snakes and, you know, giving his victims this and letting people like when he tells that girl, come my child, come to me, she knew what he meant and so did he. And like,
oh yeah, like everybody is there to just sacrifice themselves for him,
just
and
die.
That's just his like power play, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it just threw me off. But yeah, that whole scene up to even what we've talked about, it was very unsettling. You know what I mean? In that way. And I'm like, not the black guy with blue eyes and long hair controlling. What is this? The Chappelle Show? Do you remember that? Where he was the white supremacist? Like, seriously. Oh,
the blind white supremacist.
The blind black white supremacist. That's what it was giving me. And I was like,
just want to say, it's hard to defend anything Chappelle did right now because of his transgendered comments, and I really don't support that. But I have to say, when I was in my 20s, there was no comedian smarter and more on the edge than Dave Chappelle.
Yes.
And that black white supremacist sketch, I still hold up as the best sketch that's ever happened in comedy. Like, it's so funny.
Right. It's so,
it's the whole idea of he was raised in this blind school, and they don't want the kids to be mean to him, so they don't tell him he's black, and then he becomes a white supremacist.
Yeah.
And he's always wearing a hood so nobody knows he's black.
Nobody knows. And then like they do this documentary on him. It's so good, but that's what it was giving me. Like when I thought of it, I was like, hold on, did they predict the future? But no, I will give it that. Like, it was just interesting to see every dynamic, every kind of view. And that's why I was like, maybe that's where I was mixed, confused on some things, or I was like, this didn't make any sense, or this didn't either, you know?
There's other things we can't just gloss over here either. Mm-hmm. The whole thing with him being sacrificed on the tree of woe.
Dude.
I'm like, how do you put that scene in and not realize that you're aping Christianity? Like, Milius totally denies it. And maybe in his mind, he wasn't intentionally doing that. But once you throw in a crucifixion scene for your hero and then he's resurrected, there's no other way to look at it.
That
dude.
Is exactly what it was. And
thing that's why it's a holiday movie.
Exactly. And it's Christian. Everybody. No, and that was the thing, is couldn't help but laugh. He goes, crucify. I was like, shut the f- up. We're not gonna crucify this not on a tree in the desert like Jesus. Yeah, that really happened.
And just like Jesus, when the buzzer starts picking at him, he bites the buzzer neck. And kills it.
Dude.
That scene never fails to make me laugh. No. Like, my kid was walking by who wanted nothing to do with this movie.
Oh my gosh. But
they were walking by and I was like, here, check this out.
Yeah.
They were like, what?
Dude, he straight ate that freaking vulture and that thing just falls down. And I'm like, what just happened? Did he just eat the vulture? Did it die?
They put Conan out and I guess he's dead. Like, they don't really say whether he's dead or just super injured.
I didn't know, because, you know, back then, you know, the eyes still move when they're like not a dummy.
So maybe he's just like near death. But when they put him out, those spirits are going to claim him. And
so they're
his friends are fighting him off.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things. She's fighting off that. I guess they originally put the scene to ILM and ILM made it look like Raiders of the Lost Ark, which had just come out. And they were like, like, no, 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 this is too close to Indiana Jones. So they reworked it to rotoscoping, which is,
I can see
from what
that.
I understand, where you're like drawing animations onto the actual film frames. And so you're like drawing it on there. So you have these little ghost-like appearances
coming out of nowhere.
It worked when I was a kid. It absolutely worked. Watching it now, I'm like, wow, this effect does not hold
swing
up
left,
even a little.
Swing right. Okay. Try not to get him in his face. Forward.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is when you look at the advancements of CGI, it looks really bad for a while because the actors don't quite know what they're doing. You know, like they're trying to direct them, but they don't know. And now they have the thing where they'll have somebody dress up in green or whatever so that they have something physical to act against that they take out of the frame. So they understand, like, if we're going to swing this way or whatever, it's fine. But in this, they're clearly not doing
they
that. So it's just
nothing.
Like they're just swinging wildly and then they have to like awkwardly draw these things to like
when,
go this direction and that direction.
When he starts floating, because he goes, when they start to let him take him away and he starts to float, don't let him. And I was like, when what? When what comes out of where? And then like these things just like the wind hits and then this red cloud comes out of nowhere, which turns into a red light on them. And then here come the red demons or ghosts or spirits.
Yeah, I think they're spirits. Yeah.
You know? And so I was like, what is happening?
Conan and Sobatai and Valerie go off to the temple where the followers are having a cannibalistic orgy. They kill their way to grabbing the princess, but Doom has turned into a large snake and escapes. They ride off and Doom turns a snake into an arrow and shoots Valeria. Conan takes her to the stones and cremates her. They prepare traps for Doom's army. Conan tells Crom to grant him revenge, and if he doesn't listen, to hell with him. The orgy dude,
like,
is a lot. It's a lot,
like,
man.
While you were reading, I'm like, Alex, don't look at me because I'm going to start laughing. I'm like, don't look at me. Hide your lips, Xavy. Dude, I was trying to figure out, I was like, are they eating chocolate mint ice cream melted? That lady's like eating something, and I didn't realize that until they lift up the hands and stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't know they were eating human. You know what I mean? She just like, I'm like, oh, is that celery? What is that? Soup? What are you? I was very curious as to what they were eating. But the orgy scene, dude, let's just talk about Arnold's face when he sees it and his eyes get big. It's like, yeah, that's what's going on. Ugh, and like, I'm sorry, that did not look like a kind of orgy I wanted to be a part of.
No.
But that whole scene,
especially when it ends with them slashing through everybody.
Literally.
That scene they had to cut so much from because it was so violent. People didn't mind the sex so much, I guess, when this came out, but like the violence was like, hey, you had a PG movie and then you turned it to R because look at all this blood.
Well, there was
like learned from Beastmaster.
Have we not learned nothing? Well, there's a whole decapitation part right there. She's just like, slap. I was like, oh, there goes his head rolling down the way.
Yeah, there's a lot of decapitations in this.
Oh,
for sure.
There's lots. I'm okay with decapitations.
I always think that's really cool when he grabs a snake, Doom, pulls it back in his boat, and then it like hits her and then becomes a snake again. And they always just throw snakes like they're no thing because they use them to wrap up people.
Yeah.
To bind people, or he uses them as snakes. But I do think that's kind of a cool idea.
It was all right. I'll give it all right. I was kind of laughing because I'm like, what?
Yeah. but it is a cool idea that you don't see. Like, we've never seen anything like that in another fantasy movie, right?
No, and that's true. Not where someone turns a snake.
They're usually like
something.
Sparkly thing. It's an arrow.
Yeah. Here, take my stargazing.
Yeah, exactly.
Galaxy blasting.
Yeah, we don't see them grab a snake and stretch it out, and then it's an arrow.
Okay, I'll give it that. That part was pretty cool. Man, and then he'd pull it out. But yeah, also I was like, what? You know, he'd like, he just has a snake. Pulls it out. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. You have the whole thing where when they're setting up the traps, when Conan gives that prayer to Crom, like, we're once again facing the fact that Crom doesn't care. Like, it's saying God doesn't care.
Yeah.
And so he's asking for vengeance, but then if you don't grant it, to hell with you,
right? Yeah,
like, right. Like, that is nihilism right there. Like, I'm going to do what I'm going to do because it doesn't matter anyway. You know, he starts that out by talking about how you won't remember who is good or who is bad or who did what, you know? It's just all this nihilism that's running through it, which I do think it's really, really interesting because you do get Christian imagery, but then also you get the idea that God is unfeeling and doesn't care.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Back then, I guess, yeah, if you didn't pray, that's what they felt like. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The traps take out most of the army. One of Doom's men nearly kills Conan, but Valeria's ghost appears to temporarily blind the man, asking Conan, "Do you want to live forever?" The princess asks Doom to save her from her suffering. He shoots a snake arrow at her, but it's blocked by a Subutai's shield. He heads back to the temple. Conan fights the last man who is using his father's sword. He cleaves it in half with his Atlantean sword. Okay, so a couple of things going on in here. First off, Valeria turns into a Valkyrie,
yes,
which is one of those things that Milius says no less than like 100 times on the commentary. He's just like, she's a Valkyrie, Valkyrie, oh Valkyrie. And it's like, okay. It's a 3-second scene, dude.
Yeah, and we understood where you were coming from. She did say, I will travel from hell and back to come get for you. We got and it.
She does.
She did.
But what I find interesting about that, too, is it's not Crom that's saving him.
It's his wife?
It's, well, no, like, whoever she is, the love of his life, right? Like, oh, we
I
never
thought they got
him
married in this. I thought that was, like, the whole scene why they were having a party.
I just thought they were drunk, but who knows, dude? Like, they never address marriage in this movie.
He threw a chicken at her. I don't know if you caught that. And her face was priceless because I was like, that's definitely, he definitely threw that at her. And her face, that looked like an actual reaction. Like, did you just throw a chicken at me?
So it's like the love of his life saving him, but the God doesn't save him.
Yeah.
You know? But he still has to do it himself. She just gives him a chance.
Damn, she came out of nowhere.
And this is where it starts to go into fascism. I mean, we've got lots of things there, but you've got somebody who's really strong at the start.
Yeah.
And Schwarzenegger is this really strong person who's just going to like have his own way. Like at the end, they say that he becomes king of his own hand and everything. Like there is a fascist narrative going through this.
There's something there where you're like, okay. So,
and I love this movie, but like, gotta call it like it is, dude. Like, yeah, it's kind of fascist, kind of racist, like kind of a big, strong kind Reagan component. Nah, it's racist.
It's racist.
Wait, let me give you a way into how I think, which is anytime somebody says kind of, they're saying definitely, but they're softening the statement.
I hear you because I use the word kind of a lot.
Yeah, but you I'm can always take it out the word kind of because it doesn't matter because you're saying it is.
I'm working on it. I'm so I've got
so
you.
I apologize.
I
it's not kind
you,
of
brother.
It is.
It is.
You're right.
First scene, you know, oh, James Earl Jones in this. Then you say, what? Blue eyes, long hair. Like I said, if they would have made him blonde.
And like long hair, fine. But like it ain't gonna be straight like
not
that.
Like that. Yeah, what that looked like Asian hair. It was like long, black, and beautiful in a weird. It was like,
was
Indian
it black?
Hair.
I felt like it was like dark brown.
Was it dark brown?
I think so.
Oh, you know, I'm gonna go home and look at this.
And then
if
I think,
dark brown,
I think later it's like, I think later it's got some gray in it because they're trying to show the passage of time, right?
Right. Which he's like, back then I was young. I was like, I didn't look that young.
James Earl Jones was young and like Dr. Strangelove, so that's going back a bit. They have the whole thing where like it's basically Home Alone, right? Because like all their whimsical traps that they set up where a giant spike impales a dude and things like that.
Oh,
Conan's playing
gosh.
Kevin McAllister on top of everything else.
By the way, that fight scene with him and the hammer guy and the other dude, Kiss, you know, dude, that dude was giving me rock star. I'm like, they're like, throw this wig on and this coat. All right.
Yeah, yeah.
This looks like this is about that time.
And that's the dude who's using Conan's father's
sword,
I think, because you get the impression that it's because Doom has given up the steel, right, for the flesh, so he gives it to his subordinate.
I don't know. The rock star thing, when they were fighting the whole time, I was like, I can't take him seriously. Like, there was a point where, like, he's, like, looking and his hair's all wild, and I'm like, man, why does it look like you had a rough night the night before, and you're getting out of bed with all your... Like, that's what it was giving me.
And the whole thing where Conan, you know, like, cuts apart that sword, it's almost like saying that doesn't matter. Like, it's about the strength. Like, he's using the lesson that his father taught him to destroy that sword. It's not about the sword you're using. It's about who's using The sword, right?
Basically, it's all what's in your hands. Oh, also the arrows. I remember the scene. Homeboy shot arrows at the snake, and then in the
You're right. Conan goes back to the temple and approaches Doom. He tries to mesmerize him and tells him that he created him, and in a way,
I am your father. Yeah.
Conan uses his father's broken sword to chop off his head. Then he throws it down the dais. The members of the cult leave. Conan burns the temple and returns the princess to the king. Akira informs us over voiceover that Conan sits on a throne as an old man and that he will become king of his own hand, but that is a story for another day. When he's cutting off Doom's head, it's like gnarly because it's not one chop. He's using a broken sword, so he's just like...
He's just hacking.
Yeah, just...
I will say it was pretty...
And sawing. Sacking and sawing.
It was satisfying to have the villain go down the way he did, though. I was like, okay. But towards the end, I love that, like, he holds the head up, drops it, and then everybody's just throwing the candles away, like, oh, okay, this is over. Oh, okay, we can go home.
Okay, I need to ask you a question. Have you seen Apocalypse Now?
I have not.
Okay, so Apocalypse Now was written by John Milius, who directed this and rewrote this from Oliver Stone's script, right?
Okay.
So Apocalypse Now ends, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen, you know, the super old movie.
Yeah.
But it ends with Martin Sheen's character going up to Colonel Kurtz, who's the bad guy in the whole thing, and he decapitates him and then holds his head up on this dais in front of all of his followers and then flings the head down. And I'm like, you literally rewrote this. The same scene ending? And put it into Conan the Barbarian.
He was like, it didn't hit as hard.
So there's this really famous documentary called Hearts of Darkness that followed the freaking nightmare that filming Apocalypse Now was. And Coppola just keeps saying, we don't have an ending. The ending isn't strong enough. Like, he's really upset about the ending. He can't come up with anything better. And it's almost like Milius must have heard this and then doubled down and was like, it's so good, I'm putting it in two movies.
Oh my God. And it's not, I mean, it was good, but it wasn't that good. Yeah. Like I said, like, oh, decapitation. And towards the end, it wasn't like he had, I didn't get that from the movie, is that those people burning the candles were followers. It really was. They were just like, oh, his head is off? Okay, well, let's just throw our candles out. Yay.
Yeah, just snuffing it out.
I'm going home now. Thank you for your time.
And that was way too long, too. You could have just showed them lining up and snuffing out their torches for like 30 seconds and been done with it. But they keep showing a new angle.
Why did we watch 100 people burn their candles? I didn't need to see all that crap.
So one thing we haven't really mentioned talking about this movie, we haven't talked about the score, which I think is like really, really good in this movie. So Basil Poledouris, I apologize if I've mangled the name, but he put this soundtrack together and it's really incredible. And this is a dude who got used by Verhoeven later. So we talked about how Verhoeven did RoboCop and Total Recall and Starship Troopers. All of those movies this guy scored. He was Verhoeven's guy after this. And so he put this together using 90 orchestral players and 24 choral singers. It's epic, like you want a movie like this to be epic, you know?
Yeah. So honestly, after even talking about it, I still didn't like, I enjoy some aspects of it? Absolutely. There are lots of things. The witch scene was probably one of my favorites just because it was just
it is so iconic. WTF for sure.
Yeah, like y'all should have seen me sitting in bed and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. Oh, they getting their freak on. And then she does that thing where she's like, and then I was like, ah! And I was like, ah, oh my God, what is happening? Oh my gosh. And the part where he punches the camel, holy shit. Oh.
Yeah. How did I not bring this up, dude?
I pissed my pants.
It's so funny. And then it was so horrifying because I just read that, like, no, he did that. That was one of the reasons why they were in the crosshairs of a lot of animal rights people, was he punched the camel for real.
He did?
Yeah, he did. It's terrible.
Oh my God.
It's terrible.
That's awful. But I feel bad for laughing as hard then.
Still
but
funny. Like, still funny. Not but funny that he did it, but funny in the movie.
Yeah, that camel didn't do to you, Arnold Schwarzenegger. He didn't do nothing to you. He was sitting there and you bumped into him with seemingly you were the one that was on peyote.
Yeah, you know, it had the smell about it and it looked a little strange. So I was like, maybe I'll punch him and teach him a lesson.
Dude, there was that and the part where he does get on a camel. I was like, man, I hope that camel drops.
I was worried he was going to be too heavy for the camel.
Damn, I know. How big is he? Is he like 6'7"?
So he's like 6 feet, like, okay. Which is big, but it's not like big. Gigantic. But he was so wide and like strong.
Yeah,
there's this really famous picture of him being held in between Andre the Giant and Wilt Chamberlain, because Wilt Chamberlain is in Conan the Destroyer with him.
Yeah.
And they were both friends with Andre the Giant. So they went out and had lunch at one point. So there's this picture of him in between them and they're holding up each side of Arnold. And he looks like a little child next to those two.
Oh, dude, I'll have to find that picture.
I mean, like, Will Chamberlain is probably like 7'2", something like that. And like, I don't even know how big Andre the Giant is, but that is a big
Andre,
dude.
I thought Andre was 7'7".
I mean, he very well could
be. I think he was 7'7". He was up there.
Yeah, he was pretty big.
But holy crap. Arnold looked real freaking good in this. I'm not really.
No, this is peak Schwarzenegger. He was off of Mr. Universe. So, you know, he was super ripped in an almost disgusting level of ripped. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking about
it. Like when they get too many muscles. But they wanted him to be more athletic. So he did all this crazy training stuff and wound up dropping 20 pounds of muscle. He looked more athletic afterwards. So like this Schwarzenegger that you see, I think, is to me like prime Schwarzenegger. Like, he's never going to look better than he did in this movie, because he's so cut, but he can move really quick and he still approaches humanity like you know what I mean, where it's like you are like a peak specimen, but before that it's gross how many muscles he has.
You are he looked good, and I'm not, like I said, I don't really find him to be that sexy to me. He's just it just seems like too much broad, not enough brain. But in this movie, I was like, Lord, your sex scenes and things. You're just running around. What is this movie doing to me at one point? He was a good looking man back then. That and Terminator. Those, I'll give him two. The first Terminator. I don't know about the second one.
Really?
Oh, no. No, I love the movies, but did I find him attractive? I don't know.
Okay. Oh, I got you. I thought you were trying to say the first one was better than the second one. I'm like, no. Okay. All right.
The second one was
better. We're on the same page.
Oh, yeah. Second one was better because they did a whole, that was the one with the liquefied guy.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
When they figured out CGI finally, I think.
He said finally.
They were trying
your facial expression was the best. That's why I was like, okay.
Well, I had to suffer through bad CGI for a big chunk of my life. And they figured it out enough with Jurassic Park where they make it work, right? Because they use it kind of sparingly, but it works. And then Terminator 2 is when they're like, we can do things that have never even existed in life and still make you believe it. And to me, that's like the biggest breakthrough with CGI in terms of on-screen representation.
Thought of making a guy that can morph from liquid into human beings.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. It's super cool looking. The last thing I wanted to say about this is, yes, this is a slow movie and it doesn't hold up like it used to. But if you're like a big Lord of the Rings fan, for example, I think you kind of owe it to yourself to watch this movie, because that movie is very much built off of this movie.
Yeah.
And yes, I'm aware that the novels were around before this movie. I'm not sure if the Conan novels weren't around before the Lord of the Rings novels. I'm not sure. I'd have to look that up. But all that being said, they're borrowing things that are present all over in this movie. And if you like fantasy stuff, like, this was the first huge example that we got of it that wasn't Star Wars, you know?
Exactly.
And like, Star Wars is still a space thing, but this is purely like a sword and sorcery thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's really one before this that did it better.
I agree.
And so I think it's like an important movie to note, but I totally get people not liking it now. I understand. Yeah. I still have some nostalgia for it, but I will note all the cracks and seams and white supremacy that runs through this. Once again, whether they meant to or not, it's there.
Yeah, it's there. Also, I do want you to go back and look and see that rat kicking scene.
I'm absolutely going to watch
that. Dude, I know
you
are. As soon as I said it, I was like, I know you're going to go back and look at it.
I'm betting somebody's already put that clip up on YouTube. So hopefully it wasn't a real rat.
It looked like one. Of New York, number one original. Wake pop culture up by dying on the job. And I kinda like to be the one to tell you. Girl, you may not too.
A Cosmic Void was created by Alex Small and Jeremiah Perez. It's hosted by Alex Small and Xavier Cousins. Produced by Aaron Donaldson and Alex Small. The theme song Duke of New York A No. 1 was written by Dub Campbell and Greg Vivrette. The song is performed by Tonight We Ride. A Cosmic Void is a Redwood Sound Labs production.
Okay, kiddo, I lost my library of sound, so I need you to do some sound effects for me.
I don't want to do this, Dad.
Look, I'm just trying to put food on the table, but if you don't want to help...
All right.
Hear Biggs chronicle a galaxy of genre. Listen to the deconstruction of film on A Cosmic Void. Charles is a Purple Heart recipient and cinematographer. Aaron is a professor and critical cultural scholar. Together, they explore the narrative, effective, and production politics of war cinema on Real War Project. That's R-E-E-L, War Project. Finally, a podcast that's dedicated to talking about your favorite sports movies. Whether you want to hear a breakdown of the plot, arguments about who's the MVP of the film, or crit and lit about it, you'll find it all on Fields of Glory. Listen to the show that will help you have a better life with your beloved pets. It handles topics like proper food, nutrition, positive reinforcement training, and more. Certified dog behavior consultant Charlotte Peltz welcomes your pet concerns and questions in the podcast, Living with Your Dog. Zach and Matt are two horror enthusiasts of varying experience discussing horror movies through the scope of content, context, and comedy. They'll hit on the good ones and the classics, but they're really excited for the bad ones. Listen to Watch No Evil. You can find all of Redwood Sound Lab shows at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts.